David Kitchener, and I'm the Publishing Director of Essential Install Magazine. And this is the second in the Essential Install Magazine podcast series. Today I'm joined by Cliff Stammers, as some of you will know, is a Questron Master Programmer, with this session being entitled Programmers Who Needs Them. And if I know Cliff, he will have a lot to say about that. I'm also joined by our own Daniel Sate, our very own editor of Essential Install Magazine, who tirelessly works hard every month to put the magazine together. Welcome, Cliff. Welcome, Dan.
Hello.
Hi there. How are you doing?
During these podcast series, we will be talking to industry people from industry associations, custom install companies, and even the odd distributor or two thrown in for good measure, with a view to ascertain what they can offer the industry, how they see the industry going in these challenging times, and how they got to where they are today. The aim is to produce a must-hear series of podcasts for the industry and help installers do their job better. However, back to our guest, as well as a master programmer, Cliff writes music and is in fact writing a novel. So Cliff, before we get into the world of programming, tell us a little bit about the novel and did the butler do it?
Oh, how embarrassing. did the butler do it? No, but I might have to steal that as a concept. Listen, this is a long-held dream. It's something I've been, I've worked on trying to do this very same story about four times over the last 25 years. So basically it's trying to illustrate that moment when you make a decision and you kind of think, was that the right thing to do? And until you actually know whether that was the wrong or the right thing to do, it's that time that passes between sort of the gestation of an idea and the outcome, the consequence of that idea. So I'm trying to explore that little gap there. And the whole thing's set against the backdrop of... It's quite an interesting, it's like a dark, very gothic kind of sleazy scene, if you like. Amsterdam, 80s, 90s, that kind of vibe. And it's got a great twist at the end.
You were there, Cliff, obviously.
No, absolutely not. No, don't know what you're talking about. There's a lot of stories in it, and it's an exploration of people's ideas.
I listened to a radio article the other day which actually talked about decision making and what goes through your mind to actually get to the point where you make that decision. It was really quite interesting.
Yeah, it's the mechanics of things, isn't it? I mean, it's and do you know what, actually, we will come on to it, but looking at logic, looking at code is you're looking at somebody's thought patterns. And I can't think of any other instance where that is so prevalent.
In terms of just as a point of interest, in terms of code, Cliff, I've been in the publishing business a long, long time. You've been in the programming business
longer,
20 odd years.
Oh yeah, 20 years, mate. Yeah.
And do you find that there are no new ideas now? A lot of stuff is regurgitated.
That's a really good question. I think there are ideas, new ideas, but I think the new ideas are already preformed. Does that make sense? You know, somebody's cajoling you. Somebody's leading you towards a new idea now. You're not really thinking up something new yourself. Maybe.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are exceptions to that. There will be many exceptions to all of these things because rules are there to be, you know, navigated, really, aren't they? But, yeah, I think new ideas do exist, but they're just slightly less unique.
Yeah, I find it interesting these days because... I talk to our staff and I come up with an idea that actually we formulated 25 years ago. But of course now everybody holds their hands up and think, wow, this is fantastic. Yeah. But it's simply regurgitating.
Yeah, do you know, I had a conversation with my old man and he died 32 years ago. So this is how long ago. I remember having a conversation with him and saying to him that because do you remember dial-a-disc? Do you remember you used to... put 2p in the yes. phone box. Oh, listen to me now, really showing my age. We used to put 2p in a phone box and stand there and listen to the hits of the day and for about 5 minutes, and they cut you off. And I thought to myself then, they should do video like this, they should do TV like this. And I remember having a conversation with my old man, must have been 1985, saying, I really can see a time when people watch the television through their phones. And he, what are you talking about? I said, I think people, and I envisaged it as a cradle. You'd pick the phone up and put it in a cradle and it would send the video down to your TV. Oh, man. It's like, there we are. We're doing it, aren't we?
No, it'll never happen. Never happen, Cliff.
Well.
Never happen. Anyway.
I actually can't work out why people, I can't watch TV on a phone.
No,
do it.
I agree.
It's like,
yeah.
It's like listening to music through, you know, a piece of string and an old tin can.
100% agree.
I can't bring myself to do it. I know it's like, it's not an issue for most people. It's for a lot of them, it's what they've grown up with and or it's, you know, it's a means to an end if you're stuck on a train. Or
well, no,
like
but
that.
I'd read a book, Dan. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, I'd just pick up, I love books. I'd read a book personally, but...
We could read your book, couldn't we?
Yeah, I'm going to have to give it away.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that, by the way, because Amsterdam is my second favourite place. So if it's set in Amsterdam in it the is. 80s and the 90s, I was definitely...
Oh, man,
there.
Really?
The coolest person I knew was my best friend's older brother at the time, and he lived in Amsterdam, and he would come back to Norwich occasionally, and we all just thought, oh, he's like the coolest guy. He's in a punk band. They you know, he lives in that. So we used to made a, like a mental note. We have to go.
Oh, mate, I went there in 87 in May, and there was the grasshopper, of course, down on the dam rack, bottom of the dam rack. I sang around there. And I went out there about five or six times from about 87 through to 90. And, blast.
I'm trying to remember years, and I can't. All I just remember is the Excalibur bar and sort of blurry stuff around
very
the
good
edges.
Stuff. That's... Yeah, brilliant, mate. Great fun.
I tend to go there for a week. I remember the first 2 days. The rest is a blur.
Yeah, well, the show's not there now, is it? So I was, you know...
No.
That's a shame. But, Cliff, Barcelona in the summer...
Yeah, it's got to be better.
It's quite appealing. Yeah. That's assuming we're going off track a little bit here. But that's assuming, of course, that they can get it together in June, because I think I heard from Boris and the boys and girls today that they've extended the furlough and company loans, bounce-back loans, until April next year.
When you say what, extended the opportunity to apply for one?
To apply for furlough,
yeah,
for
well,
companies,
yeah, okay,
and any bounce back loans, no. But the point is, I'm not altogether sure that there'll be a lot of people going to ISE in June, because a lot of people have been saying that they're not going.
Right,
go.
Well, let me tell you, they've already cancelled next year's Crestron Masters, which was in May, so that was always going to be. I mean, that was pulled this year when the lockdown came, and they've already sent us out an email saying they're not doing it next year either. So.
Is that really?
Yeah. Well, they did it online. They had about 650 programmers worldwide, because they usually split the Crestron Masters into two. So they have the American lot and then the rest of the world, frankly. And so the rest of the world convenes. It was Amsterdam and now it's Madrid. But last year they did it online. So they had the whole shebang virtually over a 2 week period. It worked quite well.
Interesting.
And I think probably because it worked well, it's so much more efficient. For everybody, cost-effective, you know. We can carry on earning, can't we, in and out of the lessons and modules.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think things will get pulled. I think we've got another year of all this.
You're
I know.
Heaven forbid.
Please.
Now, the main subject, programmers, who needs them? And, of course, the changing face of programming within the home automation universe. Over to you, Cliff, really. Paint the program picture for us in today's world.
Thank you, David. Yeah, very interesting premise. Who needs them? Who's ever needed them? About 10 years ago, Crestron changed the terminology. They started calling programmers service providers. And I think that really, now looking back, was a clear indication they were ahead of the game with that. And that's where I think we are now. Because whether or not we're configuring or programming, we still have a very innate understanding of how a system goes together. So a kind of a technical design thing, if you will, or maybe a consultancy aspect to our services that we can offer also. But certainly we've had to diversify away from just writing raw code and trying to make things work. You know, we're called on more and more often to lend our knowledge towards system design. You know, someone might call me up and what's a good screen to use as a display, or what's a good audio server in a place where they may still want to keep audio servers. So we are adapting. We have to adapt. I mean, we're in a technological world. If one isn't able to adapt, you know, you're in the wrong game. We've got to think on our feet and we've got to move things on. So I think that's where we are.
So programming as a service industry, and reinventing itself. Yep. Is it changing?
Certainly the tools that we're being given to work with are changing. Absolutely. Languages and protocols are changing. They're growing up. I should perhaps put it best like that. For example, the internet's leading the way in terms of custom designs and interfaces for you know, user interfaces, graphic user interfaces. We're all used to our smartphones where we can pinch and zoom and all of that kind of thing, and swipe gestures and all of this. Now that's second nature. When that came out 10 years ago with the advent of the iPhone, the iPad, the iPod, that was, we were all like, wow, okay. Everyone said the days are numbered for touchscreen interfaces, but they're not, because there's a different, it's a different kind of it's a different kind of service that we want to provide. You know, it's not, we're not using it as a consumer interface. You're using it as a more high end interface. You know, it's not quite the same thing.
Cliff, do you think that, I mean, the main difference that we see, that I've noticed in the last sort of few years, is obviously a lot of the major platforms moving from a position where everything had to be coded to less and less needs to be coded, you know, with things like Crestron Home, you know, they're not alone in that, where you sort of, you've got a situation now where they will tell you, well, you know, 80% or 100%, if you really want, you can do kind of drag and drop. It's nice and easy. You just choose what you want to do. So what room does that leave the programmer now? I mean, because the manufacturers will say, well, actually, it's a good thing because you get most of the workaday stuff done. Then you can sort of sprinkle your fairy dust, spend all of your time on the really cool stuff. Is that where we're at now? Or is
No, we are, Dan. I think it's a good picture you paint. I mean, you ask, what does that leave us? And the answer to that is it leaves us less. But, you know, before there was a glut of work. There was so much work for the last 20 years. It's been great. And there still is a lot of work. I am not afraid of it's kind of like a homogenous approach, the consolidation by manufacturers to make their products more reliable in the eyes of the consumer. Fair play to them, you know. I don't necessarily want to sit on site for hours on end designing and writing an entire interface for an audio server. If someone's got Sonos and Crestron can interface with it right off the bat, and we download that app and put it on the screen, and I can do it in half an hour, less, 15 minutes, you know, that gives us more time to do other things, polish things more. We always run out of time. You know, we always say it will take 10 days to do a job. It ends up taking 20. I mean, this happens constantly. Maybe I'm just slow. I don't know. But I like to focus, and I'd like to focus on the little tiny intricacies that make things right. And all the back-end stuff, great. If it's already been invented, there's no point in reinventing the wheel. No point whatsoever. So this is a good thing. I mean, we're still in demand. That's all I can... I mean, I sometimes do wonder... Listen, the first time I ever heard the phrase, you lot are going to be out of work before too long, was about 15 years ago. I'm not exaggerating, because when Crestron brought out, and I am speaking specifically from a Crestron perspective, because that's my nuts and bolts, you know, although I've got other interests, which hopefully we'll come on to. I remember when Crestron brought out their Adagio server. Do you remember that thing? And it was a self-programming, in quotes. Listen, people were saying, this is easy, we can do it in half an hour. I remember commissioning one in about an hour and a half, thinking, wow, I could be out of work soon. No, there's still opportunities, and it's growing as well. It's growing. There are more programmers now than there have ever been. So, you know,
is that because people are moving into? I mean, obviously, HTML5 is now in play in a way that it wasn't before. Has that meant sort of automation programmers have had to kind of, if they weren't au fait with that already, have had to kind of 100%. Bring that into the shop?
So yeah, they bang can do on, 100%. I was going to mention that earlier when you said about it growing up. Yeah, that's what I mean by that, because the control protocol, the interface, especially HTML5, which for those listening that don't know, HTML5 is the language, the internet's written in HTML5, if you like. You know, all your websites, everything that you look at, that's this custom style sheet, which is the color and the look of it all, if you like, and HTML5 is the functionality. So yeah, 100%, Dan. But the new screens that Crestron have brought out, they're all based, entrenched actually, in HTML5. It's very, that is the way that programming languages are going to go. 100%. And it's the same with processors as well, Dan, because now C# is the back end of choice. And again, this is what grown-up developers are using. So you're right, if programmers haven't got those disciplines under their belt, they need to.
Do you think then, as the roles changed a little bit, over the years? Has attitudes to programmers changed at all? I mean, you know, there was a time that, you know, you guys could kind of, you know, you were carried around on golden chairs and wore little crowns. No, no. And
hate
things
all
like that,
Dan, please. I really, that's embarrassing. I mean, honestly, we are so badly thought of. It just is, honestly, I could cry. Man, we're just all in this game. I've always said it, if we're all aiming at the same goal, then we're all on the same team. Do you know, really? That's how we should see it.
It's interesting that you're not programmers anymore. You are service providers now, then.
100%, yeah. And again, that's what Crestron, for one, were trying to paint us and deploy us out in the field as. And I fully understand it as well, by the way, because it's their product. And if you've got a ragtag bunch of ill-disciplined guys that are going out and screwing up their product, it's got Crestron written on the bottom of the touchscreen, hasn't it? And that's the company that's going to get the stick if all the code has been wrongly installed. So I remember having that conversation many years ago that they should take Crestron off the bottom of the touchscreen or the manufacturer's name. They won't know who's responsible. But it's not, you know, it's not the product. The products are really very, very good. They don't fail. They're really good. It's installation, it's programming. That's there, and data, mostly data. They're the biggest reasons why these things fall over.
Do you think there's a way that programmers can perhaps repackage a little bit what they offer? Because you said earlier about time on site, the amount of experience that you've got, if you've been in the programming game for a long time, there's a whole sort of well of knowledge about not just programming, but what happens on site, who's likely to be the problem, who's likely to be the problem solver, you know, things like that, which are kind of just, you can't learn them, you just have to experience it and build up a bank of knowledge. Is there a way that guys like yourselves could kind of repackage that knowledge?
Yeah, 100%. That's where I'm at with my new company. That's what I'm trying to do, is to go at it, actually give a broader service base and not just focus in one area. Now, for example, when I got into this, it was through, I'm keen on audio. You'll know that from where I'm sitting. So I always used to write music and do that kind of thing. And that's what got me interested in writing control systems, because I was distributing audio and video across large properties. That's less and less common now. That has certainly declined. And more often than not, we're called in to write software for new builds, and there'll be multi-dwelling units, you know, high-rise blocks to you and I, and there are hundreds of them going up around Nine Elms, just up the road from me. And we only ever really do lights and blinds and climate controls and maybe some, you know, security cameras or a door entry system. Never are we asked to write software. Very, very, 5% of the time, 10% of the time, are we asked to write software for audio or video distribution. I mean, audio distribution is done with Sonos. It's an inbuilt thing. All you ever do is connect a front end to it, an interface to it. But suddenly I found myself in this world of BMS. You know, I'm putting a nice glossy front end on a building management system, lighting, blinds and heat. So that's where programmers are going to be heading. That's where they should be heading. It's less about the cinemas and the big yachts and all the rest of it, and it's more about the small self-contained BMS systems. That's
you mean service providers, don't you?
Service providers, yeah, absolutely, of course. See how quickly I forget.
It's amazing that that's all about the industry evolving, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's amazing that all the installers used to call themselves custom installers back in the day. Now, of course, they're smart home technicians.
That's interesting. Is that what people call themselves? I've not heard that one.
Well, seeing you are promoting the smart home technician, I know a couple of distributors I know that they don't employ custom installers. They are smart home technicians. But that's how the industry's evolving, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's all going across to IT, and I'm assuming that the emphasis on smart home technicians training is going to have a lot greater emphasis on IT than a custom installer training would have done 10 or 15 years ago, you know, by virtue of the fact that we're all living now. I mean, what was it? I read a report years ago, 70 billion devices connected to the internet, something like that.
Wow.
All online at one time around the world.
I think the issue with trying to come up with a good name or a good phrase for this industry is always going to be a difficult one, and you know it doesn't mean we should stop trying, and you know there are some good ones out there. It's just that we spend a lot of time discussing and saying to install companies, you know, the good thing, you know, the real strong thing about you is that you're all unique. You're all unique. So so trying to then give everyone the same title, the same name, is kind of, I don't know, it just seems kind of counterintuitive a little bit, because nobody's going to be sort of, everyone's always going to have a, well, that doesn't really describe what I
do.
Do
you know what? That's made, reminded me of the well-worn phrase to say that, you know, always remember that what you do, you are an individual in your life, you are completely unique, just like everybody else.
The only thing in with the custom installer tag, we've said for ages, Dan, custom installers, that title is meaningless. I mean, they could be kitchen installers, and so therefore it doesn't. I think the smart home side of things actually describes it a lot
yeah,
better.
For sure.
Essential Install Magazine is the leading title for the smart home, AV, and home cinema markets. Packed monthly with news, views, features, products, and case studies, it's a must-read for any integration company looking to source new products and increase their profits. If you'd prefer to get your smart home and high-quality AV news online, then get along to EssentialInstall.com. Updated daily with news, product releases, and case studies. Essential Install is the last word in smart home, AV, and home cinema coverage. Don't miss out. Stay up to date with Essential Install in print and online.
What's a worst nightmare you've had, Cliff, on a job?
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Where do I start? I mean, the stress of programming. Let's go with that for a moment, because that can be huge. You know, you've got a lot of responsibility. You know, people say programmers, they're ridiculously paid and all the rest of it. Well, I can assure you, and everyone around as listeners, we're all rolling their eyes now, but I'll tell you now, right now, hand on heart, that we charge a good rate per day, but by God, do we not get that day? I mean, man, we'll do twice those days, you know, seriously, because you've got to see things through. And it's when you come up against a project that's intractable insofar as you therefore can't go for any additional costs. You know, if it's on a price, you've got to do jobs on a price these days. You can't just go in and expect somebody to have an open blank checkbook for you. It's not going to happen. So you agree a price, but your paperwork, your logistical infrastructure, all of your Q&A, your I's and T's, everything has all got to be completely well grounded, signed off and agreed by people. And if you don't do that, David, that's where your worst job comes in. Because you've got to do that kind of, you've got to agree it along the way. You've got to be fair. You've got to say, if it overruns and I'm working weekends, I've not quoted that time and a half, I've not quoted that double time, we need to be grown up about it and come together. And if people aren't going to be flexible like that, that's when the friction occurs, and that's when you get your worst jobs. That, honestly, that's where how it happens.
And the majority of your business is with the end user,
no.
Cliff? Because I know that some of the installers, some of the integrating companies, they've got programmers on the books.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
But you're obviously a company in your own right, so therefore do you work with some integrators, installers?
Yeah.
Is most of your business with the end users, the house owners?
No, definitely with integrators and installers, David, absolutely, 100%, definitely. I mean, the majority of work I do at the moment, I've got on the go 10 jobs, let's say, perhaps a bit less, 8 jobs. I don't want too many. That's fine. That's perfectly fine. One of those is for an end client, and that's about the right ratio. So, you know, you look at 10%, something like that. 10-15% of your clients are end users. You certainly do work with the end user because you need to deliver what they want or what they think they want. It's when there's surplus. I mean, it's very good that custom installers have adopted programmers, and every company should have one, you know, but there comes a point when they're too busy. And the reason they're too busy is because it goes back to what I was saying just now. It always takes twice as long as what you think it's going to take. And people underestimate that. They think, plug and play, you can do a Sonos unit in half an hour. Yes, you can. But then you've got to make it work inside of a bespoke system. Then you've got to make it interact with everything else that's going on. And, you know, so it never takes what people think it's going to take. It always takes longer. And that's why those custom installers who've got their own programmers are finding that they've got too much surplus work. And that's why we're carrying on staying busy.
So do you think it's true then? I heard someone the other day say, despite everything that's happened in terms of simplifying some things and making things more kind of just plug and play, actually the world of install and particularly the world of programming, has actually got more complicated, not less.
Dan, I think that's very true, and I think that's because people's demands of what a system can do for them are becoming more refined. They want more from their system. People might have been happy 20 years ago to just turn the TV on to the right channel when they press a button on the remote. Now they want to be able to turn the TV on, and they want to be able to maybe control Netflix and Amazon, or they might want to change the brightness or change it to 4K, or, you know, whatever people want to do. They are expecting more control because they can go to their interface on a computer and it will do it all for them. So why shouldn't their expensive control system interface do it as well? So, yeah, I think people are becoming more demanding, and that's what's driving the amount of work that's still around.
Cliff, you mentioned earlier on other interests. Obviously, people can't see where you're sitting, but to me, it looks like you're sitting in Abbey Road Studios. is that the other interest?
No, not at all.
I mean, what?
What's
your other interest?
Cliff? I just from a professional capacity. I mean, I'm one of these people with a ridiculously. I wouldn't say I've got a short attention span. I'll stick with something forever and a day, you know, once my teeth are into it. I've just got lots of interests, really. But no, I was talking about more in a work capacity. I used to run a company, a programming company, and we were doing Crestron systems solely. That's what we did. And that was for nearly 20 years I ran that. We did jobs all over the world. But it has occurred to me, and it's becoming clearer, that there is definitely room, and that's the company I'm trying to grow now, a company called Clever Rooms, and there's definitely room in the industry for a one-stop shop for BMS systems for the construction industry, because there's no question in my mind that a lot of construction companies, they know where to go for their electricians, they know where to go for their plumbers or their carpenters or any whatever else is going on when a building's being put up. But the IT, the data, and now this newfangled thing called smart homes, it's new to the construction industry, let's not forget. For us, we've known it for years, but they're now being asked by their clients to provide automation systems that they can actually interface with. They no longer do they want to leave it to the concierge or the guy that's running the block to turn their heating up for them or to automate that. They want to be able to go to a touchscreen and do it themselves. And I honestly believe that there is a definite place in the industry for a company that's specifically targeted towards construction companies, and that's what I'm trying to establish, David. That's what I meant by new interest.
That's
yeah, that may all sound just like I'm saying the same thing again, but it's different products, you see. That, you know, there are different interfaces to BMS systems. You've got KNX who make actuators and different kinds of modules. It's a modular system which is very, very popular in Europe. That's great, gaining a lot of traction in new builds in London. Crestron interface very, very well with that product, but so do other manufacturers that are cheaper, and construction companies notoriously are trying to do things more cheaply because they need to be competitive. So I'm not suggesting they're doing it on the cheap in the classic sense of the phrase, but they are trying to look at alternatives because that's what they do. And so there are other manufacturers, there are other disciplines, and I'd like to have a company that can offer that across the board.
I think there's definitely something in that, just because all the dealings I have with construction companies is that they love a one call
absolutely
solution. That's how they operate. So as much of something, if it's technology or if it's materials or whatever it is, if you can package up as much as of one area into one thing for them, they love that, because and they might even be willing to sacrifice a little bit of cost.
Correct.
Or quality, because that saves them time and headaches, and they just want to go, that's our guy, we go there for this, and we get what we want. That's worth
a lot. I totally agree with you, and that's for about 9 months I did work for a company. When I left the company I started, when I left it, I did spend about 9 months over in the Docklands working for a very well-known mechanical and engineering company, and that was my job to organize it, to get the control systems, you know, that's my game. So I found myself not being able to find a single one person that could do the Comlet door entry system, the Gira home server on a KNX system, the Crestron control panels and the Crestron control processor, the Loxone mini server, you know, and so on and so forth. there wasn't a single person that could do all of that and touch all those bases. If I'd have had one phone number that I could call, then that would have been just a godsend. So I recognised it, I saw it, and that's what I'm working towards. It's not easy, it's taking time. But I think next year, there's a block, we look after a block in London, it's got 156 apartments, and they're pushing us to do other things, because they've got people that have moved in, they've just got their heating and blinds, they want audio now. But there's so much work, you know, but you can't chase that work unless you've got the right infrastructure, because you're going to end up screwing it up, making a mess, losing people's trust. So it just takes time to build it. So that's what I mean. That's where I'm trying to push things at the moment. And I hope next year I can branch out a little bit more now. I'll be two years in January, having set this new thing up, and I hope to be able to push on from there when that comes around.
Okay, what about on the music front,
Cliff?
What are you doing? You're writing a lot of scores at the moment, or what are you doing?
Listen, lovely. Thanks for asking. I mean, the main thing I've done this year, when the lockdown all happened, my wife's a fitness instructor, so she works in gyms and she goes and gives classes. She do two or three. She does two a day, three a day sometimes. You know. So she's got a lot of work that way. And of course, they all closed. They've all closed again this afternoon, I believe. So what we did like a lot of other gym instructors did. We started up a website, webworkouts.co.uk. Come and get involved, people. And I started writing the music. So because then she hasn't got to pay any PRS, no royalties. It's all my music. So we can circumnavigate with that. So I've basically written about 25 songs this year. Actually, if the truth be told, it's one song and I've written it 25 times. But it's all high energy and it's good fun, and we've done it, and there's samples on the website. But my own interest is more soundtracks, as you correctly say. I like stuff a bit more soft, you know, not just full on 150 beats per minute electronic music all the time. It drives me crazy.
Unlike our editor here, he's well known for his AC/DC shirt.
Yeah.
I've got more than one. I like the idea with the gym music, though, because I do go to a gym. It's a relatively recent development. One thing that a lot of gyms have in common, it seems, anyway, is the awful, music that they play. It's like it's been curated by the cast of Geordie Shore. It's just, like, unbelievably bad. So, I mean, it doesn't really matter where my headphones, so... But it's just walking in, the minute I haven't got them on and the minute I haven't got them on when I'm leaving again is bad enough. So how people put up with like an hour.
Mate, I can't bear it. I'm terrible. We started talking earlier before we actually were recording about listening to commercial music and being forced to listen to commercial music when I worked in a factory 30 years ago. It turned me into such a music snob, and I'm really not. I really am not. But I just can't tolerate bad music. I just can't tolerate it. And most of that stuff I find really bad. I shouldn't say that, because I'd probably, people would listen to mine and say, well, that's even worse. So, but you know, and they'd be right probably.
Okay, I think that's about time. That leaves me to say thank you to Cliff Stammers, and good luck with the novel.
Thank you, that's very kind.
Thanks to Daniel Sait, who will undoubtedly continue to make Essential Install magazine the must-go-to publication every month. Thank you for listening, and keep your ears open for the next in the Essential Install podcast series. Goodbye and have a great day.
Thanks for listening to the Essential Install magazine podcast. Please subscribe to this podcast in your chosen podcast app so you never miss an episode. Stay up to date with Essential Install in print and online. Visit essentialinstall.com